You are not to discuss this matter amongst yourselves.
We don't submit reports or ask approval for specific operations, if that's what you mean. We are an autonomous department.
Any questions?
Broadcasting from an abandoned subspace relay orbiting Risa, this is Section 31, gathering intelligence for you on Star Trek CCG. Now reporting in, operatives Dan and Rogue.
They know all the secrets that you hide.
Welcome to Section 31, episode number 303. I'm Dan Hammond.
And I am Rogue Schindler.
And we still get no beep when it starts, so I've got to pay attention to the camera because that's where I'm supposed to be looking. And but in the left side, I also have to wait for it to say live. Anyway, it used to be a nice ding. You know, I guess people got rid of that. Didn't like it. Anyway, Well, what are we talking about? We're talking about the next in this series of audio recordings, an audio drama.
The Crier of Emptiness.
One of those describes me.
Very sad.
Yeah. We also have a TUI spoiler. No. Is it TUI spoiler?
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yes. TUI spoiler. Yes. Yes, we do. I don't know if I understand. I mean, last time we got a TUI spoiler from the source, it was funny, and I read it, and I had a great time. This time, I don't know if there's a reference. Do you get the reference? Is there a reference?
You know, I got to be honest. I skipped straight to the spoiler.
All right, very good. We have a spoiler, and we'll talk briefly about what we're going to do next weekend. But let's start with The Crier of Emptiness. This was... I've got to say that I was kind of looking forward to this one for one reason or another. The reason or another is that soon we'll be getting to the actual four that I've heard before. So I had this record back in the day with number 4, 5, 6, and 7 on it, and we've just heard number 3 of the stories. So I'm looking forward to next time because I haven't gone back and re-listened to it, so it'll be interesting to hear. But this was The Crier in Emptiness. We've got the Enterprise exploring a sector with not much going on, relatively devoid of suns and planets. Yeah, exactly. They expect to be done in a few days, and for some reason, Kirk says Kirk out when he's doing his
his captain's log.
Yeah. It's just over and out log. I'll talk to you later. So there's a new guy on the bridge. His name is Connors. We'll talk about him and why that's weird later on. But we've got a new guy. He sounds vaguely Eastern European or something.
Yeah, I was like not quite Russian, but Cyrillic.
Sure. We've got no Chekhov on the bridge, but everybody else is around. He's taking Chekhov's spot, and all of a sudden they start hearing random musical tones, and it kind of gets a little bit more complex as time goes on, and the music starts getting louder, and you know they get complex again and a little louder, and I like Kirk's first reaction, which is to say, "All right. Hey, this is the intership communication. Whoever's making this noise on the bridge, cut it off. Cut it out.
Oh, I thought you meant his like very first reaction, which was basically, somebody going to answer that?
Even better.
It's like, is that my cell phone? Is that your cell phone?
Exactly. Right. Yeah, that's that. So did you listen to the version with the comic that was shown at the same time? Did you see that video?
I did. I was wondering if you watched that or not.
I did. I really, if nothing else, the crackling of the record really takes me back. I mean, that's awesome. I'm glad I didn't clean that up. But the comic that they had associated with this, clearly it was sent out to another country or some studio to people who have never seen Star Trek before. They got original notes on some people, but we'll say the race of several personnel on the bridge changed radically.
And you know, I hadn't thought of it the way you did, which kind of makes sense. Like they outsourced the colorizing or something. And so that explains why Uhura is blonde haired and blue eyed and very, very white. Okay. But it does not explain why Sulu is black and has an afro. They didn't just change like what color he is. They completely changed his race altogether.
Yeah. So either this is a different character altogether who has the same name, Sulu, unlikely, or the person who was doing the penciling and artwork altogether never seen an episode of Star Trek. They got the script, and that was it. But all right. So anyway,
it was very, very distracting.
It was a little bit. They moving on though. They hear this noise. They're trying to figure it out. They're like, well, you know, we're just going to keep looking. Apparently, they spent days searching around trying to pinpoint what is going on. It's getting louder and louder. And I like the way they did it as a production wise. You know, it started out with a few tones, and then it's seriously almost blocking out what they're saying. It's getting so loud. They had these conversations with Kirk and McCoy and Spock on the bridge trying to figure things out. And I like they mentioned that if you go off the ship, you can't hear anything. So that Nurse Chapel has taken some people out in a shuttlecraft so they can sleep, which is pretty funny. I thought that was hilarious. That was an interesting fix. They can't call anyone because their comms are all being blocked by the same by static and more of the same music. So eventually, the noise is so loud that it shatters glass on the bridge, which kind of reminded me of the TNG bridge. You know, they got the panels.
Yeah.
But anyway. In the commotion, the new guy, Connors, disappears, and we learn what skill he has on his card, right?
Times two, at least.
At least. I was thinking times two. As he drags the xylophone, the Edonian LSR, this complex piano organ xylophone-looking thing, and just starts rocking out with the music that's playing, you know, with these tones and the complex stuff. And they have some kind of musical jam session. The aliens seem to be having a good time because they're playing together. Apparently, this is very, very wearying to Connors because he gets tired very quick. He's playing a triple keyboard, so, you know, I'm guessing he's dancing all over the place and playing this thing. Kirk says, all right, well done. Let's try to tone it down. Play some sad music so you can convince this thing that we're not doing well. And he does. And there's they harmonize with sad music, and all of a sudden there's a horrible sound, and then it's all gone. Apparently, whatever was making the sound is taken off, and they wonder if they're ever going to see it again. And Kirk's talking about, well, you know, when we figure out what music does to us and how it affects us, maybe we can communicate it with us, you know. And then there's this thing about a violin. And that's the end of the song. That's the end of the story. did I leave anything out? I think that was probably the I was going to say the high notes, but man.
Well, you know, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, that's the gist of it. There really wasn't much more. And, you know, there's only so much they can do in 12 minutes, and they did an interesting job of it. So, you know, it's like a short story. You can't really delve too deeply into the mystery of it, but it did feel very abrupt. Like, after all the time they spent on, oh my God, this painful music, and it's driving people crazy, and it's having all these effects, and we don't know what's happening. And then, like, bam, we discovered that it's music, and we're going to communicate it with it. Bam, we try to play it, and it plays along. Bam, it's gone. We don't know why.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have some kind of twinkly, you know, goodbye sound, or, you know, some kind of information to pass between the two so that we can figure out what was going on, whether or not it was just a happy passing, you know, hyper-intelligent shade of the color blue that was singing to them, you know, something to lead them into, you know, some kind of anything.
Yeah, I do like the open-endedness of it. Like, that's something that we rarely get in a story like that, and I think more science fiction probably should be, because we're not, you know, everything is so vast, and, you know, especially in Star Trek, you know, we shouldn't get to understand everything. There's a bunch of weird stuff out there, and we more often than not, in fact, almost all the time, figure it out in the end. And I just felt like it would have been nice to have, like, a little bit more insight, because it very much felt like we bumbled into, it's like, you know, Connors figured out the music thing, and that was great. And he, you know, it was like, just tell these whales what the hell to go do with itself. You know, it's like, you know, he's pounding on keys and the other thing is matching them, and then it goes away. It's like, I would have liked to have gotten at least a little bit of maybe understanding. Like, if they had started a minute sooner, they could have spent another minute, you know, going back and forth, played, you know, they played some sad music. Oh, you're sad. We'll play a little bit sadder. It's going to get sadder. And then he's like, oh, will I make you sad? Okay, blah, I'm going to blast all my music at once really loudly and take my toys and go home. And we never have any idea if we got through to it or not. It would have been nice to make that a little bit more gradual, have a couple more steps to it. Because you kind of get that a lot, actually very similar to, after I made that reference, Voyage Home. You know, we don't know what the whales are saying or what the probe is saying, but there is a gradual sense of communication and understanding, and then, you know, the probe pisses off.
Yeah.
And a little bit more like that, and I think it would have been fine. It's an interesting story.
Yeah, it is, as you pointed out, it is interesting that it isn't tied up with a little bow like every other story, you know. there's not a nice little bit at the end where we've got that. I will concede the point that that is definitely an interesting change. And sure, that could add something to it. So did you read any about this on the Memory Alpha?
I did not.
All right. So apparently in the comic, all the, where Connor's name is, there's a little bit, how do they put it? The speech balloons indicate that his name was once several letters shorter, and and the name of the instrument that brought out the Edonian LSR, Edonian is what Eric's was, the three-armed guy.
Oh, really?
And it was a triple keyboard.
Yeah, that would have made a lot more sense. I wonder
he would have been on the bridge anyway. It would have been great. I bet it was too hard to draw. They had a hard enough time getting Uhura or getting at least the main three right. I mean, they didn't show anybody else really, but everyone else they got wrong. I wonder if they just couldn't do it. I mean, they tried, and it says that he said it's often drawn in awkward poses, possibly indicating the penciler originally drew Arix, not a human, at navigation and while playing the instrument. And maybe everyone else was like, what is this? I'm scribbling out. And then they had to redo it as Connors. I don't know. I like the idea. I personally like the idea. It would have been great if it was Eric's, but
yeah, that would have been much more interesting, especially
it would have added a lot of depth to his character, right?
Yeah. That would have been cool, and have him, you know, actually do something. And you know, it makes sense. His alien sensibilities to sort of be able to wrap his mind around this when everybody else can't, instead of just, oh, this one guy is not an idiot while the rest of us are. Because, you know, as you say, it starts right away and you're like, oh, musical episode.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we wouldn't have had a random Lieutenant Connors on the bridge that would have been able to do it with somebody who was already there. So, I don't know. Maybe the continuity guy said, well, we've already established that Eric's has no musical ability. Or maybe the inker had no idea how to ink a three-armed guy. I don't know. I like the idea of retconning this to be Eric's playing the music, and we'll give his character music times two.
Agreed.
All right. This would make a great dilemma that requires music, or even a mission out in the middle of nowhere, you know, with like 8s band or something with nothing around it, that just requires music. All right.
Or one person with two music.
Yeah. Yes, one person with two. Ooh, that'd be rough. Oh, so all that stuff, or one person with two music, all the normal navigation stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, I like it. Okay. Overall, though, I didn't hate the story. I just kind of felt like it was just kind of fluffy and not much to grab onto.
I mean, you have to have some kind of conflict, and while there was a lot of frames of them, you know, holding their ears, I never really got a sense of peril for the ship, other than, you know, exposition wise, you know, Spock is like, oh, the danger has gone from theoretical to, you know, literal. And now we know the entity can hit the resonance frequency of anything it wants because it shattered some glass. So that clearly means it can shatter anything ever.
Like human bone.
So, I mean, like there was clearly danger, but it never ever, I never felt like they were in danger or that there was any urgency to the episode. And I was also really distracted. I don't know that it was a great idea to have, I could see why, where they came from to choose doing it this way, but the angry, like dissonant noise making alien to be on the audio only story was maybe not the best decision.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly could have been a little distracting. As we mentioned, we had the benefit of the comic adaptation to go with, so we had some video to look at,
right?
And we could read the words that they were saying, so it was not terribly difficult to discern what was going on. But yeah, that would have been tough just sitting back and listening to it at times. Yeah. All right. Well,
so, but overall, interesting idea. You know, I give this a solid, you know, B minus. On the animated series scale.
Okay. I would definitely agree with that. On the animated series scale, this is right up there with some of the better ones.
Yeah.
All right. Next week, we get to The Time Stealer, which was also accompanied by a comic. But Time Stealer, as I said, was the first of four on a record that I had a long time ago. I haven't gone back and listened to it yet, so I'm looking forward to seeing what memories it brings up. I want to say the next three I have listened to, but for some reason, this one did not, when I was going back and listening to these like a year or so ago when I discovered them, this one had, I have no recollection of what the Time Stealer is. So I'm looking forward to that. We will listen to that and talk about it probably next Monday, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds good.
All right. Very good. Shall we move on to our Tui spoiler?
Yes. And we get a lot of commentary with our intelligence, as you mentioned, about just what this is. I think trying to interpret the story based solely on the title, which is where all this came from. I think it's just a little bit of a stream of consciousness. The card is called Defiant Reprisal. So, you know, this being Star Trek, all things Star Trek, of course, the first thing that comes to mind, and maybe the second thing that comes to mind when you hear the word defiant, is either the starship or the starship or the other starship. So that led to some interesting speculation as to what this card came from. But it actually is from a TNG episode. It's from the episode that we named, and now I've already forgotten, last week, Preemptive Strike?
I believe so, yeah.
With Ro in the TNG Maquis episode. And it's a shot of her shooting off her little non-aligned phaser.
Not a Varanti disruptor.
Yeah, not a Varanti disruptor, even though we're totally reusing this prop here. But she is taking pot shots at somebody. She's being defiant, and it is apparently in reprisal to somebody else's attack. So that's the source of the name. But this is a Maquis card, of course, and it has a block of event text.
Yeah, quite a bit. So, plays in your core. When your Maquis icon personnel is killed by a dilemma in combat or in an engagement, you may place that personnel on this event. You no longer command that personnel. When your Maquis personnel is about to be stopped or killed by a dilemma, you may discard a card on this event to prevent that. So, you throw your Maquis at a mission or combat or engagement, and if they happen to die, they can go on here. And then later on, when you're attempting a mission and you get about to be stopped or killed by a dilemma, you can remove people from here to prevent that.
Yeah, so if you've already had, this is basically people not quite jumping in front, but you know, sacrificing themselves for the future. It's like, it's almost makes me think of this mechanic. I'm I mean, obviously there's this is some Maquis action going on. We talked a little bit about that last week for the set, but this mechanically makes me think of the Borg.
Oh yeah, interesting.
You know, one goes in, it dies, and the collective goes, "Oh, that's what that does. Okay, we'll ignore that now."
Yeah.
and because that guy died to that, he can protect somebody else. But you know, this is an interesting Maquis idea as well. They certainly need some help with mission solving. So, you know, when they do go and attempt their Badlands or their demilitarized zone missions and have everybody die, they at least have a little help from them subsequently. Now, this is a win, though. So it is once per dilemma, right?
When your personnel is about to be stopped or killed by a dilemma. So I imagine that would be, I don't know. That guy's about to be stopped, and when that guy's about to be stopped, I guess, I don't know. I don't know how that would work.
I think this is falls under the Chakotay ruling, where they started eroding things. So it's not while.
Okay.
So if it's while, you can just this should go be all day. But because it's when,
okay,
you can do it once per dilemma. But you can unstop one person, and then you hit the next dilemma. You can unstop another person, and you know you can do it once per dilemma as long as you have people on here, I think.
Sure. So it costs one. It's an event. It's unique, so you can only ever play one. You know what? Sorry, I'll continue. There's a quote: "Some of us chose to stay, take our chances." And the collector number down at the bottom is 36V8. So the first thing I thought of when I saw this was that looks like a decay card. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
It looks like it should be, you know, decay 4 or decay 5. So just because that's usually the way decay cards work, you put cards on it and eventually they pile up, and if you put too many it blows up and they go away. But there's just no limit. You just keep throwing guys on here, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, that's not a mechanic that is the decay mechanic, but it is not exclusive to decay cards, and you know, go as far back as it's the Vulcan one, Forever Linked.
Sure, yeah, right.
Where your feds die, they go on there, and then if you need a skill, you can pitch one and gain a skill from that person, little mind meld echo. So, you know, I think it's good that they don't have a limit to blow it up. I would suck, you know, if you hit a TPK dilemma or your ship blows up and everybody dies. Although for some reason, I think that's not actually people dying in this game because 2E.
Yeah, it would be amusing if there were a limit, but with no limit, you throw a bunch of people on there, and that's
yeah,
great. So this makes me want to go back to doing a planet first, because I don't have to care about, I can care about it, but I don't have to worry as much about something like, you know, necessary execution. Two people die.
Sure.
You know what? They were fodder. They go on here, and next time I run into it, they will not be killed, because as you said, we've encountered that before,
yeah,
and the Maquis adapt. Interesting. All right, very good. You played a lot more Maquis than I have, I'm guessing, because, you know, you played them. I don't play Maquis very often. Predominantly Maquis, did you play, you know, screw with your hand, or did you try to do a mission solver or combat points?
You know, my Maquis decks have been so weird and mostly not Maquis that I don't know if I'm really qualified. Like, Thomas would be a great person to ask, because he loves Maquis. I never really, it's one of those, I hated playing against it so much that I didn't like playing that deck. The you know, screw your hand and, you know, you never want to play again. But I did like, you know, when we went to the Worlds many, many, many years ago, the year they gave out the Future Enterprise foil, I played the spoiler deck, which was just a surprise onslaught of Maquis Raiders and blow up your ship. You know, make sure you hit, you know, one damage dilemma, and then I drop a bunch of guys and come over and hit you for two more. Or, you know, Federation treachery combo nonsense that, you know, in retrospect, that I know they were trying to fill out that affiliation without having to make any too many Maquis cards, but such a design error on their part, you know, that painted them into such a hole. such a corner for that. You know, anytime you ever want to make a Federation treachery, you have to go, okay, well, how is this going to affect the Maquis deck? And is this going to be weirdly overpowered here? And the answer is almost always yes. But, you know, I never really played that traditional Messer of the Year deck. But I do recall that in every instance playing Maquis, even watching people play it against me, you know, the reason they do all that manipulation nonsense is because they really suck at doing missions. They're unremarkable attributes. They have kind of random skills, a lot of the same skills, which is why they have to usually go for the cause, which generally inflates the, you know, subsequently inflates the attribute requirement, which means you have to have more people with, you know, unremarkable attributes. So it makes it really tough. So having something, you know, where you just keep getting your crew decimated, at least having your second crew, you know, be able to squeak a few people through might help them actually be a little more competitive in the mission solving game.
All right. Well, it's certainly can't hurt. My concern would be, what if the way that they play of, you know, just stalling so much is aided by cards like this and make the mission solving too easy. Yeah, if that was their balance, yeah. What's this going to do? But I guess we'll find out in a few weeks when the set comes out, right?
Yeah, that's always a danger. But hopefully this will be, I don't know. There's not really a good way to differentiate the cards the way you can in 1E, where you can make the sub-factions have access to different powers and not get too strong in any one area. But, well, you know, it's already painful to play Maquis, so how much worse can this be?
Right. How much worse could it be?
Oh, you mean they would actually win? Oh, okay. So it'd be painful to play and they'd beat you. Oh.
All right. Well, let's wrap up by briefly talking about what's going on locally. We were going to have we're on schedule for a 2E tournament next week, but it looks like we're going to be up here at the Continuing Committee Warehouse putting together more promos. We've got more regional promos to put together, and if I remember correctly, I believe the Continentals and Worlds promos are either done or close, so we might be able to put those together too. And I've got a big pile of tournament promos to put together as well, so we'll get together whatever we can. I have, as the shipping manager, I have added the regional kits that are available back again with on the promenade with the anticipation of these being put together this weekend, so we'll see how that goes.
And, of course, we'll have some tribbles to report.
We will have some tribbles to report. I'm going to play this deck again that hasn't lost. So, keep rolling.
You know, you're not going to retire undefeated?
No, I got to keep practicing with it. So, when I go to Gen Con, I can play the Masters with it.
Nice.
Anyway, all right. I think that's going to be it then. Short show. Half an hour.
Yeah, dope. Well, you know, we've had a couple of long shows in a row, so it'll reduce intelligence this week, but we will come back with some Tribbles tournament action next week and potentially another spoiler if we can get our hands on some more information on Time to Stand. In the meantime, I am Sir Rogue.
And I'm Sir Dan.
And I will remind you all to expand your power in the universe.
And I will draw to end. You cannot run, you cannot hide, and you cannot defect. They are always watching you, but you cannot detect.